Good afternoon.
Mike.
Mike Duff, contributing editor at On Page News and your host on the Inspiration Theater. Leanne Schwarzkopf, Project Partners Network, will take a look at global perspective on taste and innovation in our session, Understanding Global Food and Flavor Trends for Houseware Growth. Food and flavor underline many trends in home and housewares. As such, Leanne will explore current and emerging trends and how they influence foods consumers will be craving and cooking. She will take a look at the impact of food trends on products consumers prepare and serve, as well as what they will favor in entertaining decorating at home. Leanne will review the importance of incorporating these global food and flavor trends into homewares growth and the sort plan. And please, Leanne.
Hello, good afternoon. How many people were at the Circana event a few minutes ago? If you haven't seen it, I encourage you to look at the recording. It was great to listen to that and feel very validated in a lot of the things that we'll be talking about today. This isn't working. Should I just use the... We'll just do that. This presentation is the culmination of literally thousands of hours of connecting the dots that my team and I have done. We've attended retail visits, trade shows, interviewed people at conferences, looked at trend flavor forecasts, looked at industry data, and all to try to come together with a nice assortment of what's going on in the marketplace. This is going to be a lot of slides, a lot of data, so please, at the end, they'll give my contact information or maybe a card, and I'll send you a copy of the deck. I wanted to start by quoting or by showing you a quote from an organization called TasteWise. I think it very well summarizes what we wanted to talk about today. Amid endless noise, food and drink are regaining their roles as anchors of our identity. Eating becomes more than food, fuel, or flavor. It's a daily act of self-expression. I think that speaks so beautifully about how home and housewares can interact with food. It continues on, consumers are seeking products that mirror their inner lives, not just their tastes. And success lies in building offerings that feel designed, but feel aligned with how people need to see themselves. So again, throughout everything we talk about here today, and they'll be just keep in mind how can I take action on what people are thinking about eating? How can I take action on how they want to present it? How can I take action on how they want to present it? In all the work we've done, there's been some indisputable facts. There's food really impacts what's going on in the home and housewares industry. Flavor preferences are changing. Health and wellness are paramount. It's not just about weight. It's about mental health. It's about fertility. It's all different kinds of things. Experience. People want an experience. They want expressions of joy in their life. They want to have some fun while they're putting things together. But, of course, there's point, counterpoint for every data point. You'll see Gen Z is drinking. Gen Z is not drinking. So you have to filter it through and apply it to what you see going on. One of the reasons that we thought it was really important to talk about food here is because at all the food shows, there are tremendous crowds. Did anybody go to Expo West last week? They expected 86,000 attendees at that show. IDDBA had 10,000. ISM in Frankfurt or in Cologne had 32,000. Anuga had 145,000. So there's a tremendous interest in the marketplace of what's happening in food, and we wanted to bring some of those insights. So our discussion today will be coming from both the head and the heart. We'll be talking about food eating trends, flavor trends. Think about maximalism in everything you do. The term of the fancy food show this winter was sense-maxing. Almost every food-related discussion you see has the word max in it, fiber maxing, beverage maxing, whatever. So think about that as you go through. Big picture, we're all looking at a bunch of different things, interacting with our daily lives. And wouldn't it be great if it was all that organized? But no, we're spinning plans. 3 years ago, I sat up here and talked about VUCA, the idea of volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity still happening. I was at ISM a few weeks ago, and Sean Walker was talking about how it's impacting everything we do across the food industry. But things are different this time. A fear baseline is a little different than it was in pre-COVID. We all kind of understand what's happening. We're still cautious. We're stressed, but there's not as much panic in our lives. We're taking more risks. People are traveling. They want to experiment with flavor. They want robustness in their eating experience. And comfort is transitioning from, or food is transitioning a little bit from comfort to more palate extremes. So we're seeing those things happening. Let's dig into the research. At home versus restaurants. As we all know, it costs a lot more to eat out than it does at home. The research we've done is 3 to 4 times as much to eat out versus cooking at home, but people want the restaurant experience at home. They're looking for the cuts of meat that will satisfy their urge. There's still massive concerns over the economy, and it was the number one reason for preparing meals at home. We did some research with the folks at Springboard Futures, where we did a national polling of food habits and eating habits among housewares buyers, and it was the number one reason. 37% of Americans ate out less in 2025. So lots going on there. Lots of interest in learning how to cook. This I thought was interesting. Men, 66% of men were looking to learn how to cook more. Women, 50% of women are looking to cook more. They were already cooking, but that was a great data, a great piece of data, I thought. But it's all stages, and all ages want to learn to cook. Learning to cook was the number one skill I learned, the skill demanded in 2025. And 95% of people identified themselves as intermediate learners. Half of U.S. kids say they enjoy cooking for the family, and they like to cook for themselves, and they watch food content. Those are amazing things. As they're learning how to cook, the picture on the right actually is a working mixer. On the far right is a working mixer that was at Toy Fair this year for little kids. As they're working on food preparation or looking on creating food at home, prep time and ease of putting it all together are the most important things. 15 to 45 minutes is the sweet spot. Everybody wants to get food on the table quickly. Only 5% spend more than an hour in a meal. 52% are looking for 15 minutes or less. So it's all about getting that easy. But there are additional challenges. Thinking about things like cleanup, thinking about things like prep time, where do I get ideas? These are all things that you can support with the houseware industry. When you talk about cleanup, everybody hates it. The number one thing people hate about cleanup, though, is the time it takes. So think back to the food preparation thing. So anything we can do as an association or as an industry to support cleanup would be also very wonderful. Weekday and weekend, what people are cooking when. Weekday meals or weekday dinners are, of course, the largest for both men and women. And they're also the time that when most people are putting time in there. There's a smaller variance on the weekends, though, than we would have expected. And there's a high weekday breakfast and lunch engagement, which we'll get to in just a second. One of the other things that we've been watching very carefully is the idea of semi-homemade. People want to cook, but they want to supplement. They'll either supplement with leftovers, or they'll buy a spring and side dish, or they will invite friends over and they'll do potluck. We'll talk about potluck in a second. Everybody's looking for support, that they're not necessarily looking for substitution, because it goes back to the financial things that we talked about before. One of the other very interesting things we saw was people are eating elsewhere. I mean, of course, they're eating at work, they're eating at school. but they're also eating at leisure and commuting. So what does that mean for the home industry? And do things that will be allowing you to carry things to keep it cool, things to keep it warm. It's not just leisure activities on your own, but it might be hiking and stuff, but it's also kids taking kids to ball games and things like that. Snacking. Can't go anywhere without talking or hearing about snacking. Lots of data. It's probably going to be the biggest meal occasion going forward. But here you start to see a lot of those discussion points on the experience. And they want it to be gooey. They want it to be crunchy. They want some kind of a tactile thing with it. It's predicted that within the next 2 to 3 years, snacks, because they're quick and easy, will take over from lunch as an eating occasion. Gen Z is the biggest generation of snacking. 73% of them snack at least once a day to nearly a third twice daily. Can't afford to not look at snacks. There is a downside, though, and this is kind of very disturbing. Some of the research we looked at said that 80% of parents versus 66% of non-parents substitute meals with snacks because they're trying to save money. They want to feed their kids. And that's a really sad stat. And 36% of families have skipped meals and they're snacking instead. So the financial implications are really, really important to you. When dealing with difficult times, comfort and nostalgia, of course, are very important. We're seeing a resurgence of food prep and food presentation that rely on the nostalgia cues. There was an article in, I think it was Home Accents Today or Bloomberg HFN last week about butter dishes. There's a big resurgence on butter dishes. Think about grandma had a butter dish on the counter and the table. My daughter sent me a text over the weekend saying, well, there's two punch bowls available. Should I buy one or both? And I'm like, why would you want a punch bowl? And then I talked to a friend of mine, and she's like, well, I have punch bowls at every one of my parties. It's the way I serve my beverages now. And I thought, that is just a really cool nostalgia cue. I think it's drafting on the whole grandma core thing that we're seeing across things. The other interesting twist on nostalgia, though, is the idea of nostalgia. I'm sure you've all heard about that, but it's taking the nostalgia thing, twisting it a little bit, adding modern flavors, adding a little twist on how you maybe decorate it or serve it, and that makes it a little more ownable and new. Can't go anywhere without talking about protein, fiber, oil, and functional food. Not going to spend a lot of time on those, but as you know, if you on it, and according to the survey or the presentation from Circana, something like 41% of people are looking for more protein in their diets. What does that mean for the housewares industry? What can you do to help me carry cottage cheese to the office, blend cottage cheese into whatever products I'm making? What can you do to help me make a better piece of meat? Remember that? I wanted a really great piece of meat to cook prepared on. How do I cook it? Here we see that fiber is the next thing, but remember, it's not an either or. It's not going to be fiber replacing protein. It's going to be fiber plus protein. That's a really important thing to know. 60% of people are interested in no seed oils. We thought that was an interesting statistic. So again, how do you prepare your food? How do you prepare your plates with changing dynamics? People are looking for simple pleasures, but it's not just sugar. Lavender is projected to grow 114% in coffee menus in the next 2 years, and hibiscus lemonades grew 135% in the last 4 years. So the idea of the canned botanicals and other things that are making those flavor cues and providing that indulgence are really important. 89% of all consumers indulge at least once a week, but 62% of it consider it part of self-care. This is going back to that emotional wellness or that permissible indulgence, but they're looking for different portion sizes. They want a taste of something and it makes them feel good, it brings them joy. Another thing we've really seen, and we've noticed it, especially at the winter fair back in San Diego a couple months ago, pantry items are coming out. That's a different kind of indulgence. It's a visual indulgence. I want to showcase the great products I have. And I think that would translates very nicely to housewares as well. Charcuterie, going strong. It's going beyond meat and cheese. It just does not seem to stop. And it is so exciting to see all the different iterations. And I know the algorithm knows me and knows that I'm looking for things, you know, but every time I turn on my social media, I see something that is just wonderful and inspiring. And I think that's driving a lot of engagement. We're seeing it beyond meat and cheese. We're seeing it beyond snacking. Here's the entire meal is put on a charcuterie thing. Whimsical executions, all kinds of just really fun things. I had 6 pages of execution, and then the person who helped me with my deck, I said, you can pick one. Then we're seeing that translate into things like bar carts, senior stations, where you have, you know, where it used to be a charcuterie thing, once, you know, 2 or 3 things, all of a sudden you have great executions. You know, you have a whole setup on the counter where there's anything you could possibly want for your Sunday. We're thinking that's going to continue. We are definitely in a beverage culture. every day people are drinking coffee. Every day people want to bring it in home. People are looking for that experience, though. They're looking for foam. They're looking for the cold foam, that just the different things that are going to give you flavor and texture as you're drinking your beverages. It's an indulgent treat. 68% of people have an indulgent coffee at least once a week. And they're coming up with hacks like dirty soda. Entertaining with themed beverages is a big deal right now. I've even heard of, and I'll mention it again later, or I'll mention it here instead. There's something we remember you used to go to in college, everybody used to dump in a big barrel all their alcohol at the end of the season. They're having potluck beverage things now, themed, where everybody's bringing an alcohol or a beverage that goes in there and just creating these wonderful new things.
Yep.
We've heard about Gen Z and alcohol consumption going down. At the same time, we've heard celebratory drinking is going up 29%. So they're drinking less, but they are drinking for special occasions. That I thought was a really interesting data point. And tea time is the new happy hour, both with and without alcohol. People are gathering at tea time to celebrate being together, to try new teas, sometimes spiking it with alcohol. And the whole idea of zebra striping, where whether you're at home or you're out, is a trend that we've heard in several different places. We think it's going to continue. It's about, I'm having alcohol this round, then we're having non-alcohol that round, then we're having alcohol, then we're having non-alcohol. It extends the evening, extends the social occasion, and you're not, it saves you money, and you're not at risk of, you know, losing your consciousness. The biggest thing we're seeing here, the biggest opportunity now is glassware. And again, the algorithm knows me, knows what I'm looking for, but the kind and quality of glassware, the way they're decorated, things that go around the bottom, things that go around the rim, it's just a fun time to be in the beverage area, I think. So that talks a little bit about how people are eating and what are that kind of topic. But now we're going to move into the idea of global cuisine. Susie Badaracco, I've been following her now for a while. She is she's CIA trained both ways. She's a registered dietitian. She's a graduate of the Culinary Institute. She's also an expert pattern matcher who has worked for the FBI, the CIA, and Scotland Yard looking for serial killers. And her idea is you can't just look at the past, which is what the syndicated data is doing. You can't just look at the current, which is what the consumer research does. But you have to look at matching patterns and trying to kind of curve the ideas predictive. So she talks about consumers no longer looking for birth. They want novel and exciting flavors, thrill them new, and that psychological escape to take them to the next level. And when she talks about the passport on the plate, I think that's fascinating, and it speaks to what we'll be doing next. And then we also, there's another quote from Rubik's Food, who says, global flavors are going to define the future. And that I think is really moving for, again, the housewares industry, because you take a look at, you know, I'm making this up, but if you're putting together a Moroccan feast, what equipment do you need? How are you going to decorate your table? What are you going to put in your walls? It's just a lot of fun. And we found that the younger people, Gen Z and younger millennials, they want to entertain more. They want themes. So it all fits very nicely. Global cuisine had a 4.1% growth last year. According to Zucata, food in general was 3%. 82% of all the food growth from, I think it was Lipari Foods, 82% came from global cuisines. Middle East was up 17%, and Hispanic was up 92% last year. There's all, you can attribute that to population shifts. You know, according to the census, we're all watching that and seeing how the country's makeup is changing. But it's not just people that are culturally and historically aligned to a certain cuisine. Its general population is liking it too. It was a 10% increase in Korean restaurants, and halal is expected to be 10% by 2033. Having global cuisines and global items in your kitchen is status now. It shows that you're a person of the world, and that translates not only to the food you eat and the things in your pantry, but it's also things, all the equipment you have. There's also there's a health halo depending on what cuisine, and there's a thrill of the hunt. I mean, again, my daughter, focus group of one, called me up. She was going to grad school in Monterey, and every single week they prepared some kind of global cuisine at the house she was living in, and they had a blast doing it. Half of Gen Z loves to try new cuisines, and 87% of Gen Z is looking to see more global flavors at restaurants. That's an astonishing stat. The chart on the right is something that, again, we did with Springboard Futures, and we asked people, specifically housewares consumers, again, with a 2% margin of error, what kind of cuisines are you looking for? And they told us that there's a lot. I mean, they're looking for Italian, they're looking for Japanese, they're looking for Chinese, they're looking for all different kinds of cuisine. When you think about the international cuisines, there's the big three. You've got the Latin American, Italian, and Asian, right? Rising things are, you know, Korean, Indian, and Ireland, surprisingly, and Greek food. So you can see that those are growing, and there's things that are coming on the horizon. There's double-digit growth, likely limited by everyday luxury for things like the Irish butter. That's what we think is driving some of that Irish stuff. Social media is also driving tremendous spikes. There was over 1,000% spike in things like chili oil noodles and Cuban pizza, according to Spade. And I called him up and I said, what is that 1,000%? Because it went from 1 to 100, or, you know, what was the base? And they're talking millions of inquiries and millions of research that is impacting all that. So there's lots of things to watch for. But you got to dig deep. Authenticity is important, but you can't just have that food. Think through all these on the right. You've got different cuisines and different things that are happening with Venezuelan food, Uruguayan food. They all require different equipment. They have different food. They have different, you know, cultural heritage that went with them, different celebrations. So think through that. Same thing with Asian. There's different flavors that are coming up, and it's not just Asian food. It's around specific flavor profiles. We've talked about heritage. It matters. 71% of Asian Americans want to see more traditional recipes at supermarkets, which translates to more traditional food at home. 82% say they prepare to stay connected. Hispanics, 60%, are more likely to buy from a brand that supports their own race and ethnicity. I love the picture on the right. digitally savvy elders want to keep traditions alive, so they're thinking of new ways to do it. They're recording themselves, showing, here's how I make the family favorites here, here's how I reach a new audience. So that's a beautiful thing for someone who, I don't have my grandmother anymore, but I think it would be so wonderful if she had done something like that if it was available. One of the things we always say is it's not just the people who grew up with food that are interested. This is my favorite slide from a couple of years ago. Data Central did a survey, and 45% of Gen Z said if they had to choose one cuisine for the rest of their life, what would it be? Said Mexican. But that was astonishing. And again, that's Gen Pop. Can't go anywhere without spicy, swicy, which is spicy and sweet, or salty, which is sweet and salty. All these flavor mashups are coming on the scene. 51% of Gen Z considers themselves hot sauce connoisseurs, and 48% would choose a spicy version of a menu option. 15% have more than five spices or five hot sauces at home. I know we have four in our cupboard. I don't know about the rest of you, but it's really something people brag about. I thought this was interesting. 44% would pay more to have the rich, spicy cuisine available. But the counterpoint to all this, as we're hearing, is that even though they want spice, it's not about shock spice anymore. It's more about medium spice levels. It's kind of plateauing off, and some of these other things are coming together. And I thought that was a really important thing to keep in mind. 20% of people are craving salty snacks, the sweet and salty. Think about the, what is it, the Chicago mix, popcorn with the kettle corn and the cheese. And that's projected to grow 38% in restaurant in the next 4 years. We looked at 25 or 30 different flavor forecasts and came up with some commonalities. Again, there'll be details in an appendix, so if you recuse, give me your card or reach out, I can send you this. But the whole spicy umami evolution is continuing on, and everybody's, all the flavor forecasts are thinking about it. The hyper-specific regionality, that's what we just talked about. The whole is not about Hispanic cooking, it's about Venezuelan cooking or Uruguayan cooking. Sophisticated botanicals and aroma first. Think about that wonderful smell when you take Earl Grey or you're something with a ginger or something. Nostalgia and modern, how to think about modern comfort. And then the global RC profiles. For food trends and consumer behaviors, there's the opulence and the micro luxuries that we talked about, snacks as mini meals, gut health, and measurable wellness. And then GLP-1. We talk a lot about GLP-1 as an industry. I've been cautioned that we're talking about less than 10% of the population right now, so while we should keep it in mind, 50% of the people are on it and get off it, so it's a rotating less than 10%. And so we should focus everything we do for every product on GLP-1 because it's a microset of a population. Love this chart again from Culinary Tides. This is my CIA expert. She talks about the idea of when you're introducing new foods and new cuisine, start with things that have some element that people can understand. And then you can move to the things that are a little more robust or risky. And that's just a nice way to for the progressions. Now we're going to talk about joy. Everybody's looking for joy. 90% of the U.S. and U.K. consumers say joy is an important part of their well-being. And they're missing it. They can get it from food. Fun, flavorful, shareable, maximalist food helps them achieve that. And the texture is adding nuance, things like dirty sodas, that's just fun. Whoever thought you'd pour milk into this and it would become a phenomenon. The potluck punch we talked about, another just really fun. You never know what it's going to turn out like. Other things that are changing, morning cravings. We're starting to hear that in addition to cereal and eggs, people are looking for spicy, satisfying Japanese food, ramen. So the day part is melting. It's breakfast all day, but it's not breakfast food all day necessarily. It's moving things both ways. Family connection. Dinner is still so important to family, however you define it. 82% of families are making it a priority. 59% of kids are helping put food on the helping put dinner on the table. 91% of families are now thinking of some kind of meal planning and meal prep. They're looking for ways to reduce stress. They're having build your own nights where you put all the options on the table and people can kind of build their own bowls. It's taking that bowl experience home. There's sides that everybody can have. And they plan with friends. They go out to dinner or they go out to coffee. They go to the gym and they have planning parties. Speaking of parties, the return of dinner parties. 75% of young people, whoops, I can see a typo there, prefer planned gatherings to public outings. People want to entertain at home. 67% of Gen Z and young millennials have hosted a party with more than 15 people, and 63% are looking for any reason to celebrate. 64% had a themed party, and 60% prefer theme parties over no themes. They're looking for anything from a movie to a color to a certain event. They're looking at, you know, instead of turning 40 and have a 40th birthday party, they have a funeral for themselves where everybody's supposed to come in black and the passing of their 30s as they move into their 40s. And here again, we see potlucks are preferred. People are looking for help in providing the whole experience and they're looking to save money. It's not I have to feed 15 people and I have to provide all the food and it's gonna cost me, you know, $1,000 by the time I'm done. I'm going to bring the side and two beverages. Other people are going to, or a main deal and two beverages. Other people are going to bring things and fill it in. And together, we're going to have a great experience. Fun and family. Eating at home needs to be fun with your flavors, with your forms, that whole restaurant experience we talked about. Theme nights, even if it's not a big party, it's just family. We're going to have a game night. We're going to celebrate around that. And this one shocked me. This came from YouGov for date night. Eating at home and cooking together is becoming a very, very special thing. 69% of the people who polled have had a date night meal at home and they would love to do it again. 13% haven't, but they would like to. 40% have cooked and baked together. So taking classes together, learning how to cook together, these are things that are really kind of turning the industry on end. But we can't forget our solo eaters. Around 30% of the population is a solo household. Even if you've got a group in a household, 57% of meals are eaten alone. So what do you need to do to support them? Now we'll switch to holidays. Different drinks happening in different countries. So again, thinking about these global preferences, global super groups, what can you offer them? How do you help them serve it? So we've got, you know, mulled wine being tremendously important in Great Britain, but eggnog in the U.S. And of course, wine and hot chocolate in France. Holiday favorites, different meals for the full meal that you might have in different parts of the world would require different preparation techniques, different equipment. So think about how that all works together. And think very broadly about holidays and occasions. As I said before, it's not just about a birthday, it's about a big birthday. It's how to make everyday celebrations important, how to put together a theme. Think about different holidays for different regions. And you know, you've got your Asian holidays, your Lunar New Year, Songkran, Diwali, Ramadan. We've seen indicated that 15% of the annual food spend for households that celebrate Ramadan is spent during Ramadan, which is double the time of the year. So it's 8% of the time in here, but it's 15% of the food spent. That's a really tremendous thing. And then there is equipment needed to do that. And then, of course, we can support all these holidays and these party themes with tremendous tablescapes, themes. And then we had a great example also from Tastewise showing a little bit of this nostalgia. So they walked through an example on Easter, and it's the same holiday, but it's done a little differently. Traditional, but new things. They want to tap into the playful and shareable. It's not a single meal, but it's still about togetherness, comfort, convenience, and value. But instead of having one meal, Easter Sunday, maybe Easter Sunday, right after church, the family gets together. It's about a weekend of grazing, brunching, and sharing. So you've got 4 or 5 meal occasions to be thinking about instead of one. And each one of those requires different housewares, different food prep, and different attention. It's not, it's no longer a big chocolate bunny centerpiece. It's about having multiple textures. It's about having multiple offerings. It's about having different ways to experience. We've talked about a lot. Huge puzzle. What the heck do you do with it? So as my team was putting together all this data for us, we just came up with a few things that we thought were great household and housewares items that would help support this. Key takeaways. Prep and clean up, critical. Let me say it again, prep and clean up, critical. Nobody wants to spend a lot of time on any of it, but they want a rich experience. You need to pay attention to different eating occasions, both formal and informal, and go very broad. It's not just about the same traditional holidays or the same whatever. You have to think very broadly. Global foods and flavors can't be ignored. Neither can social media and its impact. We can really talk about that. But remember what I said about 1,000% increase on some of the recipe searches and stuff? This is real, folks. And home and housewares are an integral part of the eating experience. So with that, thank you. We have a few minutes for questions. If anybody has, I'm going to speak.
Hi, are there any questions? Please raise your hand, and I'll take you on. Microphone, let me start. It's very interesting to me that there are so many food trends. And
this is a small craft fraction.
Right. And so little time. So when you're looking at the evolution of food trends as they transfer to housewares, are there some critical things people should be thinking about? In other words, it may not be time to do walk, but it may be time to do, say, Chinese New Year, where it's reached enough of the population where, hey, people in the housewares industry really got to start paying attention to this. How does that translate and happen over time? Who trends the house pressure?
I think it's just listening. It's just listening to what's happening in the marketplace. That's for, you know, as more young people are interested in, they're going to be sharing that tradition then with their friend group and their families. Yeah, as the population shifts, there's going to be more interest in things. And as you have family, as you have people putting together those dinner parties that we talked about, you're going to have, you know, you think about what the research was saying, that Gen Z is the most diverse group and the most willing and open of any group in history. So you're going to have more impact for those things. And I think people, you know, they were looking for reasons to celebrate. So this gives them that. Ooh, I like Chinese food. I'd like to learn how to prepare it. This is a perfect excuse. So it's you know, it's over Lunar New Year, and everybody's going to come in there, you know, bring their favorite dish, or we're going to do a participatory dinners. You're going to make egg rolls. You're going to make dumplings. I'm going to make something in the wok. I think it just evolves naturally. And then some of the things we're looking for, again, I'm paraphrasing Studio Susparacle, She talks about if you have a trend that has siblings, it's got more longevity than if it is something that stands alone. So with the example she used last week, when I heard her speak, was Dubai chocolate is Dubai chocolate, kind of is what it is. It might be able to go here. But when you have something like sweet and spicy, and you've got spicy, and then you've got the salty, and I mean, she brought it out, and like there's siblings all around there where they could do different mashups. That takes you, I think, again, farther. So I kind of went around your question.
But that makes sense. But what I think that makes it interesting, potentially interesting, in terms of housewares industry, because although Gen Z and millennials do a lot of attention in terms of, you know, trends, terms of selling, Gen X and boomers out bottom money. And we saw the phenomenon of electronics, of asset, young people teaching older people. Will we see that in housewares? Will this translate up to parents?
I think it will. I think, you know, my daughter focus group of one, when she's wanting to try new cuisines and stuff like that, it's inspiring to me. That group is the one who is buying products, setting up households, things like that. So I think there's the halo effect of how it impacts their parental units and grandparents and whatever. But I think from a very real standpoint, if they're looking to have global cuisine, they're going to be wanting a rice cooker, or they're going to know how to cook just the best damn rice on the stovetop. They're going to want to know that, what other equipment do they need to cook? Do they need a wok, or can they do a skillet and it's kind of round and they can do this at form of like Kermbus? I mean, I think we'll be paying attention to that group. I do think it goes up because this group, you know, the research shows, and again, we couldn't pull up all the research we pulled, but or couldn't show all the research we pulled, but these older people are looking for more food too. I mean, yesterday I ordered a burrito. Did I order a burger? Did I order? I had, you know, some most amazing butter chicken. It was wonderful. So I think everybody's looking to expand their food horizons.
Any questions?
So I think these on indulgence was really interesting because I think it sounds like we're moving towards more immersive, curated experiences and possibly the homewares like things that facilitate that. And there also is this sort of tension with people not wanting to spend as much money on facilitating things. So how do you think that will kind of solve itself?
Some of the research I've seen is that they're not going to spend a lot of money on like big things, but they'll spend a small amount on other things. I mean, they were calling it the lipstick effect. I'm going to buy a $4 lipstick or a $10 lipstick, but I can't afford to spend, you know, $40 on something. I can't afford to go out for a meal, but I can go out and have a really great, or I can prepare a really great chocolate mousse and I need a little small cup of it. I think we'll be seeing a lot of that. And then there was some research I saw at IBIE, the International Baking thing, and they actually did research on a plain donut. People will spend this amount. If you add icing, they'll spend this amount. If you add icing and sprinkles, they'll do this amount. So it like went from 99 cents to $6. And think about coffee. I mean, you can buy coffee. If you can make coffee at home for cents, you can buy it at a diner for $1.50, or you can go to Starbucks and have everything you want. That's $8. I think those small indulgences translate to other goods too.
I can't. If you really the point about a social media, can that be a part? It is so huge. I mean, and I noticed, because I love food, I've been getting to all of these feeds recently. Some of them are charming to educate and speak, or person to preach just that. And they're amazing and gotten to be so much more sophisticated. And from those, there's two of them are actually curving from Greece, from young Greek women, one of whom cooks with her mother at Kaibili. And that's so fun. And it's fun to see how they're fleeting. A lot of it is from a table. And the craving and everything is as beautiful, as busy, as young. It's something really just the attention.
Absolutely.
Time for one more, do I?
Dip.
Bye.
Sorry.
Me, yeah, just a.
In moment.
So I'm curious, with the data that you pulled, was that trending narratives around globally, or was that...
Which data?
The data around interest in local flavors. Is that more like rural city? Is that all across?
I have to... For the data we did with Springboard Futures, I can pull that out and tell you what's rural, what's urban. You know, I can split it out by income and stuff like that. The rest I'll have to go back and look. So if you give me your card, I can come back to you with that. But we're generally seeing urban leads, and then definitely suburban and rural are seeing some of that too.
Thank you.
Correct. Well, thank you for attending our session. Thank you, Leanne. I hope everybody appreciated and got something good to go home.